This is Brian Margolis, and welcome to the Simplify Your Strategy, Magnify Your Results podcast, where on each episode, I use the pillar system to help a sales pro, entrepreneur, or other results-based professional create a weekly strategy to run a simple, more lucrative business. A strategy so simple it can fit on an index card, but so powerful it's actually helped create multiple seven-figure earners and is now licensed by some of the largest companies in the world to create strategies for their teams. If you'd like a free copy of my book on exactly how to do this, or want to be considered as a guest on a future episode, head on over to productivitygiant.com. Enjoy the episode. This is Brian Margolis, and welcome to the Simplify Your Strategy, Magnify Your Results podcast, where on each episode, I use the pillar system to help a sales pro, entrepreneur, or other results-based professional create a weekly strategy to run a simple, more lucrative business. A strategy so simple it can fit on an index card, but so powerful it's actually helped create multiple seven-figure earners and is now licensed by some of the largest companies in the world to create strategies for their teams. If you'd like a free copy of my book on exactly how to do this, or want to be considered as a guest on a future episode, head on over to productivitygiant.com. Enjoy the episode. So welcome, Ariel. And we were just discussing, so give me the history of your knowledge or your use of or your exposure to the pillar system, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, so I first found out about you, I want to say it was last May when you did the podcast with the Salesman podcast. So I follow him, and then I really resonated because for me, I'm all about less is more. And the role that I was in had us spread across lots of different channels. And I personally had always felt a little bit of dissonance with that. I knew that I could focus better when I was focusing on less. And then so your whole thesis of simplicity, and rather than thinking about all these complicated strategies, focus on the key activities that you need to do every week, the ones that are going to compound and make most of your revenue, that resonated with me. And I have since moved into a different role. So would love to recalibrate with you and see what your thoughts are on my pillars now.
Okay. So you were exposed to the pillar through one of the podcasts I was interviewed on. And then did you read the book, or did you just kind of use the podcast to figure out, you know, kind of do the pillars on your own?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if it was an excerpt from your book or if it was your full book, but okay. I think somewhere on your website, there was one or two chapters. It wasn't long, but it was actually written material that I studied and used to make my pillars.
Gotcha. Yes. I know what you're talking about. Okay, great. So let me get a little bit of background then. So what do you currently do? How long have you been doing it? And, you know, just talk to me about your customer, who you're going after, and then we'll get into the bottlenecks and stuff.
Sounds good. So I am in HRO outsourcing. We sell to small to mid-sized level companies, which for us, it's employee count. So anywhere from 10 employees on the small end, which is not really where I spend most of my time, all the way to I can sell up to 300. I can sell up to 1,000, but I usually spend most of my time within the 50 to 150 employee range. And what we do is obviously outsource HR, but what that means is when you have a small company, they don't have as many resources and time and capital to dedicate to, you know, building their own HR team. So to be able to outsource it to us, we have a software, but we also have a service model, and that allows them to get access to our large resources and also our expertise. So we help out not only with the defensive type of HR, which is like compliance, making sure you're protected by all the legal things, but we also help you strategize your human capital.
Okay. So it's a B2B sales, and you're selling the service and or the software to outsource HR and a lot of the things that go along with it, right? Pretty straightforward.
100%.
Do you have a geographic territory?
Yeah. So
do you visit clients, like when you call on prospective clients, are you going out and meeting them face to face? Is it mostly done virtually?
Great question. So I am an outside field rep that has taken a pause with COVID-19. So we're doing everything virtually now. But prior to COVID, I do have a territory, a couple cities, and I usually drive around, do a lot of prospecting, knock on doors, drop in, as well as have meetings, you know, in person. So I started back in April this year. This was a recent promotion. So I did start when shelter in place had already happened. So I've been here a couple months now doing everything virtually, and we typically target the C-level still for a company of that size. CEO is the best. CFO can work as well. If we're not able to go get access there, we will go down to HR and use them as mobilizers.
Got it. Kind of try to turn them into advocates, cheerleaders, and work your way up.
Totally.
Okay. So, and you said you do have a geographic territory. Is that a state, or is it a few big cities? Like, what is the size? I mean, are these overnight trips? Do you fly places when things are normal?
It's actually zip codes within a city. So some cities are smaller than others. So it's like 1 to 2 zip codes, very okay. Small. I have maybe 3 of those. It's all driving.
Got it. Okay. So it sounds like if your territory is that small, it sounds like there's a lot of businesses that there's no shortage of, I'll call them leads for lack of a better word.
I haven't worked at, you know, a different company than this. So I don't know how it compares. Mm-hmm. I would say that it's probably better than some rural areas out there. I am in the Bay Area. But as far as leads go, we don't get a lot of leads. It's actually, for my role in particular, it's hunting.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's what I was saying, leads for lack of a better word. Maybe the opportunities, I guess, is there's a lot of companies that could use your service in those few zip codes.
I think it's definitely in line with the quota, if that
okay.
helps.
All right. That does help. Okay. So let me just ask a general question, and then we'll get really specific about your weekly strategy, about your pillars. So if I said, what is the biggest bottleneck in your business, right? What is holding you back from hitting/, in my opinion, crushing your quota? Is it access? Is it, you know, conversion rates once you're in there? Is it, you know, you're losing people shortly after you're signing them up? What is the biggest one bottleneck in your business to going next level?
It would be access.
Okay. So access to, I'm guessing, the decision maker.
I should clarify. Access as in gaining access, having more of those initial appointments, I would say is the biggest thing.
Okay. So with a qualified person, whether they're the decision maker or they're one or two degrees away from that person.
Correct. So okay. Just the initial executive overview.
Okay. But you feel like once you're in the door, once the ears are open and you get to demonstrate your product, give your pitch, that kind of stuff, that part of it, although I'm sure it can, you know, like everything, it can always improve. You don't feel like that's the biggest obstacle. It's actually getting in the door.
You are correct. Once we get in the door, conversion is not a problem.
Okay. Awesome. So that's good. That's good to know that your product is, you know, people like the message and the product works. People are happy. So let's just go down the three pillar questions. Okay. Let's go down the three pillar questions and see what we can work out here. So, and again, we're going to talk right now about potential pillars. Don't worry about actually turning these into pillars. Let's just get an idea of what's going on. So if I was to ask you, you know, what is something that you already know how to do effectively that if you just did more of or were more consistent with would have the biggest impact on your business, what would that be?
Cold
so in English, we're basically saying you already know how to do this effectively. You know you need to be more consistent with it, or you just need to do more of it.
Yeah. So calling, making calls, prospecting, sending out emails.
So I'm just writing here, prospecting both phone and email.
Correct.
Do you find that one is more effective than the other, or do you do some kind of combination?
I do a combination. It's interesting. I did see more success with phones a couple months ago, and I've always been a phone person. I actually hate writing emails. It's boring for me personally, mm-hmm. but phone was really good in the beginning of COVID, and my territory has since switched at the beginning of our fiscal. So now I'm not seeing as much success in phone. So I think it does, within the area I'm in, there are little pockets where, you know, certain types of tech companies, not as much phone access. So you want to do more emails. So I think it depends on a couple of different factors, especially also with the unprecedented times that we're in, but I normally do a combination of both.
And are certain accounts, obviously 80-20 rule, are worth a lot more to you and your company than others, right?
100%.
Do you have any budget for any other kind of prospecting? Can you send them physical packages in the mail? Can you buy them things? Can you send certain kind of things, you know, kind of like get in the door packages and things like that? Is there a budget for that?
Basically zero. It's $25 a month.
Got it. Okay. So if you wanted to mail someone to someone, we're talking about, it's got to be $25.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what about social media rules?
We typically use LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and that's also a channel, but I don't use it quite as voraciously as I do calls and emails.
And is that your own kind of personal bias, or is it the company is very careful about, they have too many strict rules on LinkedIn?
No, personal.
Okay. What about research? Do you use LinkedIn and other ways to research your client?
I do, but I don't personally have Sales Navigator. Mm-hmm. So I do preliminary research based on what I see on their profile. But sometimes the groups that we're working with also may not have a big presence, especially when they're more blue collar. There are maybe 50 employees. So I use it for the initial pre-call planning. But once we get further into the process, the actual meat on the bones is usually through the client's own data and through our other resources that we have relating specifically to what we sell.
Got it. Okay. So you need to be more consistent with prospecting, both calling and email. What else do you need to be more consistent with?
Tell me if this counts. So there's a lot of internal administration in between each step for, you know, our process. I'm not an admin type of person. I like being on the phone. And so I usually procrastinate those steps, mm-hmm. and leave them till the last minute, the night before. And that's when I come back and see there's a lot of things I actually need to gather. It would have been nice if I had known this beforehand, because now I have to go back to the prospect. So it does come up. I would say it's not quite as detrimental as just not prospecting, but it does tend to be a little bit of a bottleneck sometimes, because now I have to drop what I'm doing because I haven't done this sooner.
So you don't mean actually submit, you're saying a lot of paperwork has to be submitted, or it has to be entered into the system, or some combination.
Yeah, we have to enter in data into the system. We have to go back, and sometimes our underwriters will come back and they have certain requests or exceptions. And it's usually a list of documents that we'll need to get. But I'm so focused on crafting my sales message that I don't look at that until I'm reminded to.
Got it. Okay. So here's an interesting diversion, which is whenever you want to incorporate something into your business, when you're using the pillar system, there's kind of three, when you want to incorporate something into your business, we kind of want to run a triage. Okay. And what we want to decide when we want to incorporate something new is this thing a pillar, right? Do I have to actually add a pillar or adjust one of my pillars, right? Or is it a task? Meaning, is it something I just need to do once? Now, it could take you 5 weeks to do it, but when it's done, if that makes sense, right? So is it a task? Is it a pillar? Or the third option, is it just a mindset? Meaning I have to change my mindset around something. I have to, you know, ask myself different questions, think about things a certain way, react a different way. And so I guess with this admin one that you're talking about, could this be as simple as a task instead of a pillar? Meaning, do you have some kind of checklist, or could you make a checklist so that on every call that requires it, you have this checklist in front of you to make sure before you get off the phone, you've asked for, you know, this, 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 and this?
Yeah, I think the checklist makes sense. It's probably a combination of both making sure I follow the checklist and also the mentality I have behind it. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with you there.
But it's so it's not a pillar. It's in the other two categories.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because for me, I would be thinking about this as a, you know, as a checklist that when you get on the phone, there's these, you know, you can have a stack of them or however you want to think about it. Or for some people, they'd rather just open up a page on their computer. But you know, by the end of the call, these are the things you have to do, right? Mm-hmm. As far as the mindset goes, I think maybe you need to change. This is something I always get into with clients and people in my program, usually on hitting your pillars, but sometimes just changing the words around something can change your mindset. So for example, instead of just saying, thinking of this as admin, all right, as a checklist, or it's admin, or it's stuff I don't like to do, you can almost rename this as, this is my time saver checklist. Right? This is my make my business easier checklist. This is my more free time checklist. Does that make sense? In other words, thinking of this checklist as a positive thing, not a negative thing. Because to me, look, you get more free time, or again, depending on how your brain works, more free time, or it makes your business easier by using this checklist, right?
I like that. And I think you're right, because I totally call it admin, even though it's technically not really admin in the sense of like CRM type of admin. It's still related to my deal, but I clump them in the same group just because that's not the type of activity I like doing. And right. I color it some ugly color on my calendar. And so I totally agree with you. And I think I'll start reframing it as a, this is going to make my deal smoother type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it'll make your life easier. It'll allow you to get more deals. You know, you'll come up with the words that fit for you, but sometimes just what we call something can change our visceral response to doing it. Because it sounds like this is having a checklist like this on every call would actually be a positive, not a negative, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll put that one over there. Let's come back to what you have to do more consistently. And by the way, there might be admin stuff that you don't do consistently that you might have to. We'll see if it rises to the level of the pillar. So let's keep going down this road, you know, and I'll just start throwing some things out there to get your brain working. But, you know, what about things inside the meeting that you have to do more consistently? Do you feel like you need to be asking for referrals more consistently? Are there clarifying questions or things you need to make sure you're asking inside each meeting, right? Are you getting off the phone and feel like maybe you don't have the clarity you need? So things like that, that you just, you might not even want to do them, but you just know if I do them more consistently, it'll have a big impact.
Referrals, definitely out of that list you just gave me. As far as line of questioning, I can't think of anything there that stands out.
Okay. So so we got referrals you want to do more consistently. We have prospecting. What about customer, once you have a customer? You know, I'm just trying to get your brain going here. But what about once you have a customer? Are there things that you need to do more consistently to keep the relationship going? Are there things you need to do so you, in other words, are there other services you can sell them?
No, not for us. And okay. We basically wash our hands once they're through implementation. So it's interesting because I'm thinking here, and really the biggest thing I can think of is prospecting, because I'm a hunter. I just need to get my conversion is fine. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good actually, I just need to get more deals in the pipe. And my problem there is because preparing for these, you know, each step of these meetings, and we have maybe six meetings for one prospect, takes so much time. Sometimes that falls to the wayside, especially when I do start getting into the back and forth with our underwriters. That takes up time because that's time sensitive. So that's why prospecting definitely stands out to me as something, if I did consistently, would make a huge difference in my business. But I'm struggling to think of anything else here for you.
That's fine. What about, and I'm a big fan of combining your personal pillars with your professional ones, because it honestly, it is the same mindset. You know, the long-term goal here is going to be to develop the habit of pillar execution, that single habit that every week you have this open loop that you need to close. And so to me, if you're going to develop the habit, you know, I think of this as the business of Ariel, right? Ariel Incorporated. And so is there any, before we move on to the next questions, is there anything from a personal standpoint that you would like to do more consistently?
Yeah. And actually, would be really interested to hear what your thoughts are. With us, I'm working at home now, and I will be for a long time. So I personally am passionate about self-development. Mm-hmm. And I have had this thought that if I were to dedicate more time out of my day, out of just doing, getting more sales activity in, to listen back to my calls or record them and play back, do more role plays, that would also potentially have a huge impact in my business. But that's something I have to proactively carve time out of my day to do. So I don't know if that could be a pillar.
It number one, it 100% can be a pillar, right? That's number one. Number two is get rid of the mentality, I guess, for this system about carving time out of your day, and let's talk in weeks, okay? So we're going to establish pillars, as you know, based on what you have to get done each week, which allows for batching, right? Doesn't mean every day you have to be listening to your calls or anything like that. Now, how you hit your pillars, if you decide you want to do a certain amount each day, that's fine. That's the next step of this thing. But let's just think in terms of weeks. So are you basically saying you want to spend, you know, a certain amount of time each week listening to, when you say your calls, do you mean your prospecting calls?
That could work too. So I'll list a couple of different things that I think would help in terms of self-development. Going through the objections I've received, mm-hmm. pausing to internalize what my, you know, responses have been or should be, and role-playing with my manager, recording initial meetings with clients and listening back on them, as well as I could even record myself on calls. Sometimes I've noticed when I do accidentally press the button to replay the voicemail I just left, you learn a lot about how you sound. So if I were to continue to do that, which I don't typically do, you know, also partially it's uncomfortable and awkward. I think that's another thing, but also reading more news articles and material. So that's another thing I'll share with you. We get sent a lot of material and resources, and I also follow different people on LinkedIn, so I want to read that. Podcasts are big for me, but they end up in my to-do folder because during selling hours, I'm working on selling, and that to-do folder ends up going sky high, and I never really get to it anyway. So even reading resources like that and internalizing, because I'm new, the collateral we have on our current product that I sell, that would be helpful as well, and also getting to know my own product and technology better.
Okay. Learning. So it's really learning your product better from both a product standpoint and a marketing standpoint, using the materials that are provided.
Yep.
Okay. Listening to self. All right. Anything else?
You can add trainings into that. They do a lot of trainings for us internally, which sometimes I'll miss because I have a meeting. So then that's another hour to 2 hours I need to listen to, which I'm dating back to May. I haven't done some of them.
Well, let me ask you, do you find, are they voluntary trainings?
They are voluntary, but they are highly recommended.
Are they effective? Do you feel like that's the best use of an hour of your time? Or does it depend on the training?
It depends on the training. Some trainings are better than others, but for the most part, especially me being new, I do think they're very effective.
Okay. What about collaborating with your colleagues? Meaning, when you talk to your colleagues, do you learn a lot? Do you learn things that are working for them? Do you find those kind of talks effective?
Yes, but in small bites. So a lot of my team is new, like me. Mm-hmm. And we have maybe 2 senior members. And it's usually, it's a conversation that ends up, in my opinion, taking more time than if I were to go another route, because it's got the padding of the rapport. It's got the padding of like other things. So to just get that straight material, right. I find it personally not the most direct form of communication.
Got it. Okay. All right. So then let's move in and last thing on the personal stuff. So I just want to make sure that part's all clear in terms of consistency. What about anything in terms of, again, when I say working out or,
That was one thing I wanted to ask you about. So, with shelter in place, every month has brought different challenges, both on the market in the business world, but also, internally or personally when you're dealing with being cooped up. And one thing I realized that's been key to keeping me afloat in this time is to not so much worry about the metrics that they're shoving down my throat. Again, that's why I do like the pillars, because it's keeping things simple rather than all the different things corporate is asking me to track. But also making sure that I'm in a good psychological place with shelter in place.
Yes.
Part of that is working out and making sure that, above all, I am regimented in my, self time and my routine, my working out. So I'm wondering if we, now that we do have to be cognizant of that, like for me, that's the biggest thing I need to watch, not my daily call number. I need to watch that I'm feeling good, if working out should be a part of this pillar.
Absolutely. Look, this is just me personally. And one of the things, in the program that we work with the clients, but like I said earlier, I look at this as Ariel Incorporated, right? And, to me, in my personal life, and this is for a lot of people, working out directly affects my business. I call it your changing your mood, your state, as Tony Robbins, whatever you want to call it. But, there are things physiologically that we do that affect our emotions. It's not just mind over matter. It goes the other way, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm talking about. You've experienced this. Trying to do one thing in a certain state versus doing it in another state. So if you think that working out and how you feel around working out is better for your business, then absolutely, I would have this in there.
Yeah,
working out for me is not something I do before work or after work. Working out for me is part of my business. I do it during working hours because it's part of my business. It's critical.
I like that. I like the way you think about it. I didn't go so far to think about it that way. I think that is powerful though. So I would add working out in there, and then reading is huge for me. Reading and podcasts, just audiobooks, all that sort of things. I do actually make a lot of time to read. So I do a lot of time into that already, but I would always be greedy for more time, especially to read more sales books because...
Well, we're going to get into the learning stuff here in a minute. So just hold that thought. But let's talk about working out for a second. So working out 3 times a week. I mean, I don't know what you're currently doing consistently, but again, these are minimums when it comes to pillars, but what about working out 3 times a week?
3 times a week works. I think when I was at my peak in terms of balance and feeling good, it was actually every day.
Okay. But think about your worst week. In other words, when it comes to pillars, let's talk bigger picture, right? First, we're going to figure out what your pillars are. And then the second part is, how do you then turn the execution of your pillars into a habit. So you're doing it consistently, right? That's going to be this, the second part. So we want to start off with a number, with a minimum that is realistic, more easily achievable. Okay. It's not going to rely on being perfect at the beginning. Look, if over time, this thing, the upward spiral begins and all of a sudden you find yourself working out every day, that's wonderful, right? But I'm talking about that week in February where, you know, skies are gray. It's a tough week. Could you still get in 3 workouts, right? And so to me, I would start with a number like that because I want you to hit your pillars consistently at the beginning and then we can always increase them later.
I like that.
Right.
So I would say 2 workouts between Monday through Friday.
Okay. Well, just 2 workouts a week. So again, let me give you another piece of the pillar stuff, and I'll make sure you have the entire book when this is over, because this is the back end of the book. But you had the front end with that report. I know what you're talking about. In terms of the week of the pillar, okay, I always recommend that your week start on Saturday, they end on Friday, okay? In other words, you know, I talk about the Friday night feeling, you know what I'm talking about, you know, yeah. Feeling good that on Friday night you did what you needed to do so that your business is moving in the right direction. The reason I like to start the week on the weekends, so Saturday through Friday for pillars, is very simple. It's because, look, if you don't want to work on the weekends, don't work on the weekends. I have no issue with that at all, okay? But what I don't want people doing is not hitting your pillars during the week and then feeling like I have to work on the weekends to hit them or catch up, because that always ends bad. Either now it's a negative thing because I have to work on the weekend or work out on the weekend or whatever it is, or you honestly just don't do them and say I'm going to start over Monday. Whereas if you're going to do anything on the weekend, like work out or work, I want it to be a bonus, like you're getting ahead for the week, if that makes sense. So yeah. If you decide on Saturday and Sunday, you want to work out both days, great. You just knocked out 2 workouts for the upcoming week, okay? So having said that, do you want to try to do 2 workouts a week consistently? Is that the goal?
Let's start with 2.
The pillar? Okay. So 2 workouts. All right, so let's go into the next question. Question number 2, what is one skill that if I significantly improved in would have the biggest impact on my business, even if nothing else changed? All right. And what we're looking for here, because you talked a lot about personal development and getting better and reading and training and all these things, but I want to go to the next level with this. All right. Because I don't want you to listen to trainings and read books and listen to podcasts just kind of as you feel like it when something comes across your desk and looks interesting, right? I want to make sure a big part of your training and getting better is very specific. It's very intentional, right? So the way we do that is, look, if you're going to get better at something, I don't care if it's going from a 1 to a 4 or an 8 to a 10, depending on where you're at now, if you're going to spend the time to get better at something, what skill would give you the biggest return on investment? And I will tell you, based on what you said so far, then you can fill it in. It sounds like prospecting and things that relate to prospecting is the number one skill for you right now.
So I'm thinking about this, mm-hmm. and the prospecting is, in my opinion, it's very much an activity thing. You just need to go out there and make sure you do it. As far as the one skill that would help me in terms of actually like strategy, or I don't know if I should strategy in this call, but like a skill set as opposed to just like a mere activity. Mm-hmm. I'm actually leaning towards just being better at talking to people. And that might be super broad, but I'll explain why I say that. At the end of the day, sales is just talking to people, having conversations and being able to give them an emotional experience that will lead them towards the product. So For me, in this new role, I come from a role where we dealt with very small businesses. We went straight for the CEO, office manager, get out of the way. I don't want to talk to you. But now in this role, especially with COVID, we are seeing more and more just like groupthink. The CEO, even in normal times, would make a decision on his own, doesn't want to disrupt the work on his HR person's plate, which is totally fair. So for me, having to work with influencers and manage three different personalities all in one room and have to have these one-off conversations to almost sometimes run three parallel processes, because one person here is trying to control the process because she wants to appear a certain way. The other two are more engaged, but because person A wants to control the process, I'm not able to speak to control, you know, the people two and three. So being able to manage everyone's personalities has been very new for me. Big okay. learning curve there.
Okay. So I'm going to put that under, you ready? I'm going to put that under sales skills. Okay. And this is what I mean by sales skills. Things like group dynamics, emotional intelligence, empathy, overcoming objections, right? Mm-hmm. The general people skills that you can improve in sales. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And there's no shortage of information out there on that. Does that, when I say it that way, are we talking about the same thing?
I almost feel like that's a little broad.
Okay.
I agree.
Let's get specific then.
Okay. For me, it's talking on the phone and even from like cold calling, picking up the phone and speaking to somebody for the first time. Mm-hmm. That level of conversation skill, so that I don't sound like a robot with a pitch, and being able to, within a split second, get them to start opening up and talking to me.
Yep.
Rather than I throw my pitch on them and hope they say yes. And that carries throughout the entire process with managing different people.
Okay. So let me cut you off for the sake of brevity here. If I said communication skills, right? And I'm talking about under the umbrella of sales, right? Sales communication. How do you ask certain questions? How do you, you know, how do you build rapport? How do you get people to put their defenses down and open up, right? Is that where you're going with this? That?
I'm almost going to EQ, I think, as I think aloud. Because
emotional, talking about emotional intelligence?
Yes, because let's say,
I mean, you understand there's a ton of overlap in what we're talking about.
Totally.
Okay.
But let me just distinguish why, because I can, you know, have a perfectly sequenced sentence and communicate it well, but there's that extra level of being able to understand what it means to that specific person, that specific influencer, that I think would have a huge impact beyond just being able to speak coherently. Does that make sense?
Yep. The word I'm going to use then is effective messaging. The key word here is effective, meaning, and I was going to talk about this in a little bit, but we might as well go to it here now. Look, it's not just what you say and the words. That's one critical component, but it's when do you say it? Who do you say it to? What don't you say to certain people, right? It's effective messaging. I think we're saying the same thing here over and over, right? You want to be more effective during the conversation. You just don't want to give information and assume that what you say is what they're hearing. You know that people have filters, biases, all these things. And so you want to effectively communicate with people. And it's okay if I'm way off.
I agree. There's a lot of overlap in everything we're talking about, communication for mm-hmm. sure. But for me, my product is a very emotional sell, as many are, but this one especially so, because it just entrenches so many portions of the business. Mm-hmm. So I think a big thing that I've realized is it's being able to get my prongs deep enough into how it impacts them emotionally.
Yeah.
Maybe even personally. And that's a level of almost like empathy that I don't have from my previous role.
That's okay. So we're definitely saying the same thing. I'm using the word effective messaging, but when I say a communication skills or whatever it is, but yeah, what I'm saying is it's not just information. It's we're basically saying the same thing. I think we're looking for a label here.
Okay.
Right. We're looking for a label. Give me an example of a book or something that you say would fall under this, that you've read or that you know about.
The only book that I'm going to say I haven't read a book that.
Or podcast or trainer or something topic. I don't.
Can I give you an example of what I.
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yep.
So
yep.
We had a deal that had signed and wanted to move forward, but then come implementation, there was a small clause that came up. And the way it was worded was making the decision maker now want to, you know, rescind everything. And it wasn't enough to say that this is going to, like everything we talked about, let's review every single meeting we've had. You've said that this is going to help. This is what it's going to do. Imagine what it's going to do for your business. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough to say that. It wasn't enough to say this particular person cares about her employees, that this is going to be better for your employees. It wasn't enough to say that either, because we couldn't get over the fact that she felt like she was selling her soul to the devil. A very emotional comment.
Yep.
So the way we had to go about it was to also come from a very emotional angle of colorful language and paint the picture of, imagine what happens when you take this away from your employees. And hopefully that doesn't sound super sleazy saying this out loud, but
we're saying the same. This is effective messaging. This is
okay.
Effective messaging has to do with the words you choose, empathy, what you say and what you don't say, right? Letting people speak. Remember I said earlier about the visceral response you have to the word admin, right? Mm-hmm. We're saying the same thing. And so for the sake of time, okay, we can call this whatever you want. These are your pillars. As long as you would know it when you see it, right? In other words, to me, everything you're saying, empathy, emotional intelligence, you know, using the right words, overcoming, and that's an objection. You can say it's emotional. That's an objection. Everything's emotional. These are humans, right? That was a silent, eventually not so silent objection that she felt like she was selling out, so to speak, right? All of that is what you're talking about, right? Like more effective communication, more effective selling skills, empathy, you know, getting people to make the decision themselves, feel like they came to that conclusion, right?
Yeah.
I don't have the right label that you're going to agree with here, but I believe we're both saying the same thing. And it doesn't even matter if we're both saying the same thing. Do you know if I said to do that for an hour a week, work on it, would you know what you were looking for? Would you know how to research and find resources on this?
Well, I don't know how I would find resources on it, but I would say we are talking about the same thing. I have the lens of it being a very emotional thing, so that's what I would personally label it as, emotional intelligence.
Okay. So do you want to call it the emotional sales skills for just right now?
I actually really like that. Okay. Yeah.
Emotional sales skills. See, I guess I come from the lens of all selling is emotional.
So, yeah, my previous role was not this emotional. Not this emotional. I mean, for sure we had a level of, I definitely need to speak a certain way.
It's
but
not transactional.
Yeah, different level.
And by the way, there's a ton of resources out there on this stuff. Believe me, there's no, just Google it, YouTube it. There's every, you know, you can find it in chapters of almost every good sales book, good sales training, things like that. Okay. Let me go back to something you said about prospecting, that you think prospecting is an activity, not a skill. And this, I hope, is the biggest game changer of this whole conversation, because I work with a lot of salespeople And I've helped a lot of salespeople get in the doors and with some big accounts and things like that. Prospecting is an absolute skill. And it's similar to what we were talking about, which is, look, I can, one of the things I teach to one of the industries that I work with, it's called writing emails, you know, that people respond to. It's direct response copywriting. It's how do you write an email, a subject line in a single sentence that gets people to reply? All right. People who are into the world of direct response copywriting, the good ones, the people who are great at it, people who can put words onto ads or words in onto websites or words in emails that get someone else to notice it and take action, they charge anywhere between 20 and 80 grand a day, some of them even more, because it's the most powerful skill in the world, especially in 2020, right? To be able to write an email or leave a voicemail that causes someone else to respond. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, it sounds like I need that class.
Oh my God. Yeah, because see, there's when you just make a lot of phone calls and send a lot of emails, like you think of it as an activity, what you're doing is you're multiplying by zero. All right. If you have a, not exactly zero, but if you have a very low percentage, which you always do in cold B2B, right? It's always a low percentage game. But if you know how to write a subject line or leave a voicemail or word things in a way that gets a person on the other end to quickly understand what you're talking about, your percentages go way up. So now if you have a 0.3% response rate and you move that to a 2% response rate, I mean, you've just like 10 times your response rate, right? There's only two reasons, Ariel, that somebody won't take your appointment. You ready? There's only two reasons. The first reason is that you have nothing they value. And by the way, that's true sometimes. Not everyone wants what you're offering. Not everyone needs it. Would you agree with that?
Agreed.
Okay. The second reason, and this is probably more the cause, is you do have something, because you even said once you have conversations, your conversion rate's high, which means that people do actually value what you have, right? The second reason someone won't let you in the door, first one is you have nothing they value. The second one, you can't articulate it quickly and triple underline the word quickly, okay? In a 10-second voicemail, in the first 2 to 3 sentences that you speak when you're live on a call before someone's defenses instantly go up and they're trying to figure out how to get you off the phone, in the subject line and initial sentence of an email that they see in their preview pane, you have to be able to articulate that you have something of value that quickly. And that's where most people, why prospecting doesn't work, because they can't do it. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This is such a skill that I've written emails and added question marks where there wasn't, and we've tripled the response rate. I changed the word simplify your business, magnify your results to simplify your strategy, magnify your results many years ago for my stuff. And it caused tons more response because what I, in hindsight, what I realized was I think when I said the word business, people like yourself who don't think of themselves as a business owner per se, a traditional business owner, you saw simplify your business and you didn't think it applied to you, right? Whereas I realized when I used the word strategy, I started getting more response. That's how fickle individual words are and the way you say things, right? So
yeah,
to
that makes sense.
So to me, this is called direct response copywriting, not regular, not explaining something, but getting someone to respond. And there's techniques, right? For example, when you write an email to someone, and again, I don't know how you do it, but do you ask them to select a time or pick between a few times?
Yes.
Okay. See, you instantly just decrease your response rate on email by doing that. Because when you do that, we don't read email, we go through email. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So what you do there is now that person to respond to your email, they have to take an extra step when all they're trying to do is get their inbox down to zero. They now have to look at their calendar to be able to respond to you, don't they? Mm-hmm. So there's an, it doesn't seem like much. You're like, hey, isn't their calendar in with their email? It might be, but you and I are both human, right? We take the path of least resistance. When you add any friction, when you add an extra step, it's difficult. So what you'll notice, and I'm not here to teach you a lesson on direct response copywriting. I can give you some resources off this call. But when you just ask, when you say the words, something like, would it be worth a short call, right? Or would it be worth a short meeting? They can simply reply yes and move on to their next email. They can go, sure, sounds good. Let's set it up. Can you send me some info? And then they can move on versus saying, oh, this is calendar, next, right? It happens in milliseconds. So prospecting is absolutely a skill. You know, I work with a guy, we've become very friendly. We help each other out with our businesses, a guy by the name of Stu Hynek, who he wrote two books called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, right? You know, Jeb Blunt, who I was interviewed recently on his podcast, he wrote a book called Fanatical Prospecting, right? There are skills to getting in the door. Okay. So I'm looking at your thing and going, yes, you need to prospect consistently, but you also need to get better at prospecting. Does that make sense?
I agree. And I am a big fan of Jeb's. I meant it more from that aspect of, you see some salespeople who get analysis paralysis because they're doing all this sort of research.
100%.
And really strategizing every single word of their email. But the person who still goes out there and makes sure they make the activity, just like straight from fanatical prospecting, at the end of the day, you still just got to go do it.
100%.
That's where I came from. But I totally agree that if we were pulling on two levers, activity, but also skill set, if we can increase the skill set, then it will have a huge impact.
And that's it, Ariel. The answer is both. Look, anything, any issue you're having with your business, and I'll be able to say this till the end of time, any issue you're ever having with your business, it's either something you're not doing consistently or something you're not doing effectively, or both. And that's why the pillar questions are set up this way. So for you, we want you to have a prospecting pillar, but we also want you getting better at prospecting so you sharpen the axe so your percentage goes up, right? And did you understand that in that when I said multiplying by zero? If it's not a very effective email or phone call, of course, pure numbers, you're going to get some hits. But if we get better, we'll get it. Okay, so we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, we are.
Is there anything else in terms of skills? So we talked about emotional sales skills, right? And you can get more specific as time goes on, but you know, you'll know it. We're talking about prospecting skills, getting better at prospecting, whether that's direct response copywriting, whether, you know, whatever that is. Is there anything else on the skill side of things that pops up as something that would have a huge return on investment for you?
No, just those two.
Okay. So let me ask you one final question, and then let's mold these into your pillars, okay? The final question is, what is something that you could organize, plan, or create prior to taking action that would make the action much more impactful? And what we're looking for here, is there something you can do each week or put together or research or whatever so that something else you do, like prospecting or having sales meetings or whatever, is more effective. So I'll give you some quick examples so you understand what I mean. For some people, they need a meeting prep pillar, right? They need a meeting, meaning they go into meetings and they realize because they didn't do the legwork going in, that meeting would have been more effective had they done a little homework, right? Or it could be, you know, before they just reach out to anyone, you know, they make sure they do a certain amount of research each week to identify better prospects so that when they do prospect, the kind of people that they land on are the right people. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That didn't sound very confident.
It was not very confident at all because those two, I do tons of prep, so I don't think that applies to me.
Yep.
And
that's just that's just examples of that category. I'm saying, is there anything that you feel like you should be doing each week to make something else more effective that's not being addressed right now?
I feel like that falls under the self-improvement because the more I pause to recalibrate my skill set and improve it would make everything else next week work better. Okay. But a lot of the examples you gave, I'm thinking I do that. As far as time organization, I already plan my calendar. I have checklists like you had suggested. I do actually have checklists, just may not always follow them. So organization seems okay. So I'm thinking self-development.
Okay. Not a problem. All right. So then here's what, let's start working on these pillars then. Okay. I think we both agree that you need to consistently prospect. I think we're both on the same page there, right? Mm-hmm. What does that look like to you? What's the right number? Is it sending X amount of emails? Is it making X amount of phone calls? Is it some kind of hybrid where you, like for some of my clients, we put together a thing where they send an email and then they call the same day. And if they get a voicemail, which happens a lot, they actually refer back to the email, right? They give the benefit on the phone and then they say, you know, I sent you an email about an hour ago. If you want to connect, let's, you know, blah, 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 right? What do you think would work for you? What do you feel like you need to do each week to be consistently prospecting?
I think it would be in
terms of... Or do you want to measure it in time? You can measure it in time too.
Yeah, so I actually do both right now. Mm-hmm. So I tend to... I like allotting 2 to 3 hours a day to dial because that gives me enough time to get through around 50 dials, but also have that padding because it's going to take me time to build momentum, you know, just roll out of bed. And so I think... I like the time aspect. That's been really successful for me, but it does still boil down to if I get 50 touches out, whether they're calls or emails, that's a good number for success in my role.
Okay. And you obviously have a bias. I'm guessing it sounds like a bias toward the phone, which is fine. But you trust yourself to pick the right thing at the right moment, right?
Correct.
Okay. So is it when we say the word dial and emails, let's come up with a word for both of them, right? Would reaches be a right word? Like you have to reach out to, or like what's a word you would like to use to combine them? Or we can just say dials / emails.
Touches.
Okay. So, and you said the goal, you like to do about 50 a day?
Yep.
Okay. So since we do pillars in weeks, how do you feel about the number 200?
It actually sounds a little done. It sounds a lot. I mean, not as an undoable, but just it's not a bite-sized piece.
Okay. Well, again, how you hit your pillars and what your pillars are two different things.
Okay.
In other words, I have no problem with you waking up every day and saying, you know, I'm going to open up my day by doing by reaching out to 50 people. Right? Or 25. But we measure it weekly.
How about we measure it in time then if we're doing it weekly for this one?
That's fine.
So we can go back to 2.5 hours a day.
Okay. So 10 hours a week to that. I'm saying 10 to, I'm putting it on the lower end. You can always do more.
Okay.
Here's all we need, Ariel. This is the whole key to pillars, right? And I know you only read the first part of the book, and so maybe that's why some of this isn't, you know, making as much sense as I think it will. I just want you to feel on Friday night, like I want you to be able to say, look, I know as long as I do at least 10 hours of prospecting every week, everything else takes care of itself in that world, right? Like that's good. If week in and week out, I'm doing 10 plus hours, business is going to work, right? That's all.
Yeah. I think 10's a good number.
Okay. And you can always change that down the road. Okay. So we have 10 hours of prospecting.
Okay.
Let's talk about asking for referrals. Do you have opportunities every week to ask for referrals?
Actually, no.
Okay. That's kind of why I asked that question, because sometimes in a newer role, you're not having as many, you know, you don't have a lot of accounts. You're working people who are really happy with you, all that stuff, because you're just getting going, right?
Right.
Okay. So referrals.
Maybe we can circle back on that.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think it's critical right now. Again, I just want to be clear. Just because something's not a pillar, it doesn't mean you don't do it or can't do it. It just means it's not one of your pillars. It's not one of your, you know, the key things that has to get done every week, right?
Okay.
I have a lot of things that aren't pillars, but I just put a monthly reminder in my calendar before my day starts in a red block. And it's like any, you know, I would write myself a note like for the third Wednesday of every month and something. And I would just have a thing in there that said referrals ? And it would just cause me to go back through my, you know, notes and see if there's anyone I want to reach out to. Right.
Makes sense.
More of a task. Okay. Let's talk about learning the product better and the company trainings. All right. So I'm kind of combining those in a way, or maybe I shouldn't, I don't know. Under company training, company collateral, do you want to separate those or do you want to combine them?
No, I think it's fine. You can combine them.
Okay. Which means you know that each week you'll make the right decision. Like you'll know each week where to spend your time, right?
Correct.
Okay. So what do you think is the right amount of time? What do you think is the minimum amount of time you're going to need?
Hold on. I have to pull out my calculator. I'm not that good at math.
Well, for a week, I'm saying, do you think if you do that for an hour a week, that'll be sufficient or?
I think I would need 2.5 hours to make a difference just because there's so much.
Is that ongoing or just because you have to catch up?
Because I'm new and I have a lot to catch up on.
Okay.
So if we want to make it easy for me to succeed, we could do 1 hour for now.
Yeah, I think 1 hour is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think 1 hour is good. And you can, like I said, you can always do more. So what word do you like for that? 1 hour of learning. Company product training, or how are you going to define it?
Probably call it learning.
Well, let's get a little more specific just because we're going to have some other learning pillars. Company learning?
Product learning.
Okay. So 1 hour of product learning each week, right?
Yep.
Okay. The two workouts a week. We nailed that one. That was easy. Now let's talk about the, what did we finally call it? The emotional sales skills. All right. The emotional sales skills. What do you think you need for that each week? How much time should you be spending? And by the way, whether it's reading, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, does not matter. What do you think? An hour a week?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last thing, let's talk about prospecting skills. Now, when I said prospecting, and I kind of went through that whole thing with you, I don't know if anything stuck out, like specifically maybe you need to work on your messaging, whatever, or do you just want to start with prospecting in general and see where it leads you? Like to direct response copywriting, to voicemails, to words that work, to, and by the way, there's going to be overlap with the emotional sales thing you're going to find, but.
Right. That's why I almost feel like it would fit perfectly right in that existing pillar. Maybe we could just a lot more time with that.
It would, but here's what I want to avoid. And I have a lot of experience with this and working with people. In the heat of the moment, if you just say, I'm going to spend, let's call it 2 hours on emotional sales skills, what we tend to do is we're going to choose something that we like learning about, that we want to learn about, or in the moment, all of a sudden, based on maybe even something that happened that day or yesterday, we feel we need to would learn about, right? As opposed to putting criteria around the pillar to say, you know, I have to spend this much time on this specific skill. And by the way, there's a couple of ways to do it. One way to do it would be to say something like 1 hour of 1 hour of the emotional sales skills and a separate pillar that says, you know, 1 hour learning prospecting, right? Or 1 hour prospecting. The other one you could say is 2 hours of emotional sales skills, but we would have a caveat in there that says we'd call it 2/1, meaning 2 hours of emotional sales skills, but at least one of those 2 hours has to be dedicated to prospecting. It's the same thing. It's just how you operate. Like for me, yeah. I would keep them separate, but some people just want to combine them. It doesn't matter. It's easy, you know.
Let's combine them.
Okay. So you want to say 2 hours of emotional sales skills. And at least 1 hour has to be prospecting. I'm feeling pushback on the prospecting.
I would say 2.5 hours between the two. Or sorry, 1.5 hours between the two.
Okay. So you want to say, you know, what do you think the minimum each week should be on prospecting? 30 minutes? 60 minutes?
30 minutes.
Okay. So I'm gonna call this skill 30-90 then. 30/90 emotional sales skills, right? And at least 30 of that has to be prospecting. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Errol, I think, and again, I'm not trying to push you in any direction, but it's obvious, and you recognize it, that access is the number one bottleneck in your business, right? And I think you're going to find out very quickly that, yes, you need to consistently prospect. You've got to do the dials. You've got to send the emails, right? Me personally, these days, I think email's more effective. But if you're comfortable doing dials, you'll probably get better doing dials. That'll probably be what you'll do, and that's fine. But I will tell you this, there's a whole world of knowledge and skills on how to get someone to respond to a phone call and to an email, okay? And I think by you being exposed to that and learning the different tips and tricks and ways in and things like that, I think that's just going to open up your eyes to a whole new world. Right?
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking of that right now. So part of the prospecting for me is going to be focused specifically on emails, writing, like you were talking about, writing emails that people will respond to, leaving voice messages. So between those two activities in particular, that would be my prospecting block.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that would still make sense. I do that once weekly. You know, I go through and learn new things. A vast majority of it is still going to be those 2.5 hours dedicated to just executing on what I just learned.
Oh, no, right. We're both in agreement. You need both. We're both in agreement that you need both. And I just, the reason I'm focused so heavy on this part is because I feel like you've already accepted the grinding part, right? You know, you've got to put in the dials, send the emails. You've already accepted that part of it. I think sometimes for some people, it's hard to, Because you don't look, your paycheck doesn't change on Friday, right? Whether you spend 30 minutes and there's going to be some trial and error, right? There's going to be some trial and error. And I love, look, me personally, again, I'm biased too, because one of my favorite topics in the world is how to get in the door, right? I'm even thinking about in the group program, starting an additional call each week, you know, where that's all we talk about is just marketing and whatever. I built my whole sales, and again, this is a bias, I get it. But when I decided to start consulting and coaching others, because instead of just being an entrepreneur for myself, I built my entire business on cold email, right? And it was amazing as my emails improved. And once I cracked the code on how to get responses from people, everything else changed. It wasn't just this pure numbers game of, you know, blasting. And like I said, multiplying by zero. It's so noisy out there right now, as you know, right? It's so noisy that the most powerful skill you can learn is how to get people to look over for a second and be able to articulate your value quickly. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason I said that is also a question to you. Mm-hmm. When I put 30 minutes out there, so you see this balance of like 30 minutes a week versus, what do we say, 10 hours for prospecting.
Yeah.
Very high, like, or small ratio, whatever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
In my head, that I put it that way because I'll learn something, one or two things new each week, and then I'll go do it. Would you suggest then that I need to increase that and have more of a, you know, increase the learning and then less on the prospecting?
If you worked for me, okay, if I was your boss and I was allowed to tell you what to do, there's no doubt in my mind. Because here's the bottom line. If you can increase your response rate from 1%, like one out of every 100 people you reach out to 2%, you double your response rate. To do that with just pure numbers and dials adds another 2.5 days of dials or some, whatever the number comes out to. I don't know the math here. So to me, again, it's about, you're talking about how many at-bats you get, and that's great. But to me, the easiest way to get in the door is to actually get your batting percentage up, if that makes sense. Right?
Yeah. And then,
what's that?
So my question is, if I were, let's say, to a lot more time to learning, mm-hmm. again, coming, you know, from like a very transactional, like you just got to go out there and do it. You can see where in that world, people who sat there preparing, doing all those, they were looked down upon, right? Because they didn't, then they had the paychecks to show it or not show it.
I just want to say, this is not, I'm not talking about research and paralysis analysis and getting ready to get ready, basically avoiding the phone, right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about spending 90 minutes a week. That's it. Just 90 minutes a week getting better. Meaning, so when you write those emails, they're more effective. When you make those dials, they're more effective. There's a good chance, and I don't know what your last role was, but there's a good chance that the messaging was already pretty solid, and so it just became a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
Like, did they kind of have the formula cracked, and then you knew if you just made enough dials, you would transactionally, you'd bring in more business.
Yeah.
And the people who avoided the phones didn't, right?
I agree with that. So right. Then is so what you're talking about,
you could be in a different videos? You could be in a different environment right now.
Mm-hmm. So then if we were to allot 2 hours, and I'm asking these questions for you to expand because I am really thinking about it. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Is that listening to podcasts, reading things, like taking notes on, like, tell me more about what that would look like for your own place.
So look, you would start down and you can reach out to me offline. After this, and I know you have a hard stop, so I want to be cognizant of that. But to me, if you look at the part on reference documents, not in my online course, but in the book on reference documents, you would have a reference document dedicated to this pillar. And what would happen is as you start diving in, as you just Google, for example, as you Google how to write more effective emails, like B2B emails or something, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to get a billion videos, a billion hits. You're just kind of going through and seeing what's out there. As you come across certain authors and techniques and maybe keywords that you like, you put them on these reference documents so that every week when you go through, when you go to do your hour or whatever it is of that skill, you're not just starting from scratch. It's like, okay, these are the websites I want to look at. These are the, you know, these are the people I want to look at. These are the, or sorry, yeah, the authors, the gurus, the whatever. And it's like most things, usually eventually you kind of find the people you like or the websites or the resource centers you like. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So at the beginning, I'll tell you at the beginning, it's going to be a little bit of a scatter approach. It's going to be kind of seeing what's out there. And then what you're going to realize is now that hour I do every week, I'm kind of going down the road with this person right now or this book or this technique or this exercise, right?
I really like that.
I mean, that's what happened. That's what I mean by reference documents when I talk about it. And that's why I said I want to get specific and not just say spend a few hours on sales skills every week, right? We got to make sure a certain amount of that is prospecting. So again, if I'm your boss, at minimum, I'm saying 60 minutes of getting better at prospecting. 60 minutes is a long time. When you set your clock and say, okay, for the next 60 minutes, I'm just going to, you know, Google how to write more effective B2B emails, right? How to write subject lines that work, how to leave voicemails. You're going to go down the rabbit hole. You're going to start getting exposed to things, which are going to lead you to other things. You're going to see a whole new world out there. Right?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
There's people that are experts on this. That's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. In 2020, information is basically free. Okay? When people join my program, they're not necessarily paying for the information because a lot of the information is already in my book or in a lot of my materials. What they're paying for is that I'm shortening the cycle and I'm kind of being the accountability and I keep redirecting them, right? The information itself is already out there for all this stuff, right? And so what you're doing is you're almost becoming the curator of that information and you're figuring out what's out there. Look, there's going to be one or two ideas that are going to change the course of your prospecting. You just don't know where they are right now. So you're gonna have to go through a lot of stuff to get to them, right?
That makes sense.
So yeah, you're gonna start off broad, you're gonna go narrow, I guess is a great way to say it. It's a shame you guys don't have a budget because there's a lot of really cool ways to get in the door by sending letters and packages and other things these days.
Yeah.
So all right, so let me, for the sake of time, do you wanna change it to an hour of each?
Yes, let's do that.
So 60 of that and 60 prospecting. So here's what I have. You ready? This is what you're going to do each week for your pillars. 10 hours of prospecting, 1 hour of product learning, 2 workouts, 1 hour on emotional sales skills, and 1 hour on prospecting. Those are learning pillars. And here's the question. And here, when you're thinking about these, when you're reviewing these, okay, what I want you to think about, all right, what I want you to think about is, do I feel on Friday night when I've done this, that my business is moving in the right direction, it's just a matter of time and pressure, right? If you don't feel that way, we haven't dialed them in yet, okay? The other thing I want you to think about is there anything these pillars aren't addressing in your business, right? As you think about these, like is something not being addressed or does something need criteria to be more specific? Make sense?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm scanning right now to see if there's anything that might be missing.
Well, you can always reach out to me too off the.
Okay.
Yeah, because again, I know you have a hard stop. I know we're kind of up against it. We went on for a while, and I'm going to send you some additional stuff, some additional resources, and things like that.
I appreciate that. No, this is good. I like that I'm going to be dedicating more time onto specifically copywriting and also voicemails. That's something that I've thought about, but didn't really know where to get into, because in the past, when I had done those broad Google searches that you now clarified, I just have to get through to get to the more specific, but mm-hmm. before I find somebody, like they seem very, you know, again, broad. I don't know who I'm reading it from. I don't know how good they are. It's a simple Forbes article or some random blog post. So I like that you explained that to me more. So I'll be dedicating more time, because I do agree that's going to have a big impact. And then having a nice, solid, even number on my prospecting time does feel really good too. And then having specific times to allocate it to learning and all the other things that have been in my head but haven't been quantified. I do like the easy numbers here.
Very cool. So I won't do it today, because I have a packed day as well, but I will follow up with you. It could be later today. And I'll put together some resources for you and talk about next steps.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time and your help and expertise. Thank you, Brian.
Awesome. It was a pleasure to talk to you. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Simplify Your Strategy, Magnify Your Results. If you know someone you think could benefit from this episode, be their hero and share it with them. If you'd like a free copy of my book, or you want to be considered as a guest on a future episode, head on over to productivitygiant.com. Have a great day, and thanks again. Thanks for listening to another episode of Simplify Your Strategy, Magnify Your Results. If you know someone you think could benefit from this episode, be their hero and share it with them. If you'd like a free copy of my book, or you want to be considered as a guest on a future episode, head on over to productivitygiant.com. Have a great day, and thanks again.